Hello everyone, welcome to Nine Inch Charge. I am joined yet again by Ben of the Two Peas Podcast. Welcome, Ben.
Hello. All right, how you doing?
All right, and we're going to talk even more High Elves. Today we are going to chat about our favourite High Elf units that we remember from Warhammer Fantasy Battles that we would like to see rise again in Warhammer the Old World. But just before we start, if you like High Elves, like this video, and if you'd like to see more like this in the future, please subscribe. So, Ben, why don't you kick us off? Which is your number one unit that you would like to see returned to the game?
The answer is Swordsmaster of Hoeth, Dan.
We talked about these in the last episode and got a bit excited and distracted by the thought of them.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. They are a unit which has always kind of epitomized elvenness in a lot of ways. And, but also the main reason I want to see them back is because they desperately need new models. So the metal ones were all right. The original metal ones were all right. The plastic ones were basically the metal ones.
But they were very, very good at being rank and file. You had no problem fitting those models together in a rank. You got to give them that.
Yeah. I mean, if you had the Swordsmasters in like proper Swordsmaster, then you'd probably struggle. I mean, they'd probably be better as a skirmish unit anyway, really.
Give them more. Yeah, with those massive swords they've got to build. But mind you, with High Elf discipline and the way they would, I imagine them striking in sort of almost in unison, they would they wouldn't get in each other's way.
No. And I, again, the same as that we spoke about last time, I'm doing my Nighthorn at the moment, and they were never really able to make a High Elf sword as thin and slender as it really should have been. So, like, the great swords were just walloping great big things, weren't they? They were like half a centimeter across. and the swords on the Nighthorn, like the blade guys, are just wonderful. So, have things about swords like that would be just great.
So, well, how would you, if they were going to re-release the models, what would you like to see from them? Is it something similar to what they've done with the Lumineth, or something a bit different?
Well, I think they could go for, they could really sort of explore the idea of swords masters with two-handed swords fighting in ranks, I think. So, like, if you look at the new Stormcast models that were just pre-ordered today, we'll be on pre-order next week, sorry, but announced pre-order today. They're great. They've got loads of cool positions. You know, the swords are in guard and all sorts of great positions, but they won't rank up very well, whereas it would be cool to have them in positions where you almost have the unit look like they're all attacking in a kind of, you know,
in the midst of a flurry of blows.
Yeah, in a combine harvester of sword movement, that kind of thing. So it would be, I think it would be interesting to see how Games Workshop approach ranking up units. Because it's something I'm quite interested in how they're going to do. Because when we used to paint Warhammer Fantasy, we used to effectively just paint the front rank. a lot of the rest of it was kind of left a little bit, not taking up us to the same level.
You're just reminding me. Have you ever met Gareth? Do you know Gareth?
Don't think I have.
He's a guy in the local Bristol scene, and there was once a unit that he had to paint really quickly, I think, for an event coming up, and he painted the front of the front rank, the sides of the side rank, the back, and then all the heads, and then he was just like, right, I'm done.
Well, yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see. I think they're gonna, it's getting to sort of tough ground here, but you know, when you look at the Kings of War way of doing things, you buy a unit and the unit is the base, and things can go on there in whatever way you want. And the base has wounds, if I'm right. I haven't played Kings of War. Rather than you taking models off as they die. So they could One of the things that we used to do was have like a four-person strip of warriors in the middle.
Mm.
So you take the single ones off and you'd move the four ones off. Like you take four single ones off and then you take a... And so they could really get it so that... Because it would be really cool, wouldn't it, if they got the shieldsmen to look like their shields were overlapping.
Mm.
You know, that they were really kind of in a unit with their sword, their spears. Mm. And I don't think that's outside of their wit now to do that kind of thing.
I think you're right in that the models that we have for them are beginning to look, I say beginning to look, I think they are a bit tired. But I don't really think that the reason you picked them was for a new model, if I'm honest. Why didn't you tell us the real reason, Ben?
Because they're amazing. They're just amazing. I mean, they're swords masters. Anything that's a swords master immediately gets like plus 10 points in my book, because it's just cool. Ever since I watched like swashbuckling films as a kid, swords have always been like something I've obsessed over. I mean, I've got like six of the flipping things. Various different ones, and it doesn't matter whether it's a rapier or a broadsword or a bastard sword or whatever. They're all awesome. I've got a cup of tea coming in.
Thank you. Ah,
well, coffee. Thank you, Dan.
Very lucky.
They're cool.
For me, they just absolutely epitomized, you know. They are as far as you can go at training with a sword. They're as you cannot get any better. They're like the absolute pinnacle of what they do, to the point where, you know, the rules really reflected this, where they were, all of them, a normal unit were weapon skill 6. And I can remember if I took a wood elf hero to lead my army, he would be weapon skill 6. So they're all as good as an elven leader attacking, you know, let alone other races. They're absolutely at the top of their game, and they also had the deflect shots rule, which I really loved, which just showed how quick they were with those swords. That if a projectile was coming in, you know, if an Empire long rifle had sighted one of them or something, you had no chance because you're just gonna bing, just take it right out of the air.
Yeah, it's yeah, I completely agree. The last episode I talked about one of my favourite elven stories, which is the swords master beheading a great sword before the great sword has even got his hand to his weapon. It's done. It's almost the perfect weapon for them, isn't it? That slender, long blade, because they can get the extra strength and power in it by using the. And one of the things that Games Workshop has always kind of got, in my opinion, wrong, is that long weapons are slow. They're not. They really are not. Two-handed weapons can be absurdly fast, because especially if it's a sword, where you've got the moment of the sword and you're flicking it like that, you can make a strike in a split second. It's not like big, honking, great big attacks. You know, the benefit of speed that comes from a single-handed weapon and a shield comes from being able to block with and then strike at the same time. So you're almost doing the same thing at the same time. But it doesn't mean that a double-handed sword is slow. It's far from it. It's absurdly quick when it's used by the right person. And you know, if people want to, go and Google it. You know, two-handed sword. watch HEMA people with two-handed swords. It's rapid, because you don't need to do big swinging attacks to cause an absurd amount of damage with these weapons. Mm. And the elves are going to epitomize that, where you can just sort of strike the sword into the eye slot of an enemy and they're gone. it doesn't need to be great big like looping attacks. Doesn't need to be that. You can almost use it as a spear in a sense.
I think that's modelled in some of those storm casts that you referenced. Like one of them is holding this two-handed sword as if it is a spear. Like it's the impression I got from them. So
it's an interesting little piece of history sort of tied in with the great swords, which they don't ever write into the rules. But you know the wobbly swords? Their soul, that was designed to cut spears, so that it didn't slide along the shaft. It would always have a kind of biting point when you cut a pole. But you never get that rule as a greatsword, you know, cut spears, just disarm the whole front rank of spear.
Yeah, a very cool choice, Ben. For my first choice, I've gone with the Dragon Princes of Kalidor. What I love about the Dragon Princes of Kalidor is, again, something that we were talking about in the previous episode, is that they hark back to the golden age of the High Elves, and they would have, you know, ridden into battle on actual dragons. And of course, now at the current timeline where we are, there aren't so many dragons around, but they barred their horses in this really ornate dragon armor, and they just look really cool. And what I like about them as well is that they're all from nobility, and they are all like princes in their own right who would have had dragons back in the day, but they still carry the skill and the memory and the heirlooms. And you could give a hero up to 50 points of magic weapons and armor in the unit, which was something that I thought was really cool. I can remember playing against them, and they had things like the Ruby Ring of Ruin and stuff like that, like just firing out a fireball, like almost like dragon's breath coming out of the unit and things like that. Yeah. And they were just devastating on the charge as well. They had a 2+ save, you know, they're going in with their lances. And I think for me, talking about models and saying the Swordmasters are a bit tired, I just don't think the Dragon Princes ever aged.
Well, no, they didn't. The plastic Dragon Princes models are totally legit. They could really rebox them and release them tomorrow, and they would be fine. They're absolutely superb models. Yeah. You know, they really are. And thank God that they did them, because I cannot abide metal cavalry. Couldn't. It's just awful. It's dire. Sticking a metal model on top of a plastic horse, and you know, you just sort of vibrate the table too hard, and the head falls off the horse because it's metal and the body's plastic. Yeah, so there's a great choice. I love the Dragon Princes, and they were always so colourful.
Yeah,
a lot of like colour in the army. I always quite like the idea of doing them in different colours, as if each prince had his own different dragon. Rather than them all being the same.
That's cool. Like a kind of heraldry almost, but more to do with their own lineage. I think I don't want to say that they maybe in the current age they don't stick two fingers up to Grail Knights, but definitely in the eras before, when they were riding real dragons, they would have been, you know, the absolute pinnacle of mounted cavalry anywhere in the old world. And they're my choice for that reason, because they've got a bit of history to them. And also, I just really like the ability to give them magic weapons.
I don't think that they're far off being one of the best cavalry units in the game.
No, they're definitely not. But I think, I don't know. It's like them and Grail or Pegasus Knights, and then Blood Knights, obviously, because they're all vampires. They're scary to deal with.
I remember when the Blood Knight models came out. And they were metal, and they were like 50 quid.
But ironically, everybody converted Dragon Princes into
Dragon Knights, because no one would pay it, and we were told we had to sell a certain amount of these. I couldn't sell one because they were like, oh, they're really cool. How much are they? 50 quid? it was like 10 quid a night. It was absurd.
There are some models that are like that. I mean, I was talking, I was going to do a video with Tom about, I guess, the way that Warhammer Fantasy Battles went and the way things they could do to make sure the old world stays around and doesn't get its world destroyed. And one of the things I said that there are, you know, there were ways in which that game was ahead of its time. And one of the ways was the pricing of some of the units. A box of Witch Elves is £35 to this day, and they were £35 when they came out, and they're like a decade old.
Mm-hmm.
But there we are. So yeah, Dragon Princes are my choice. What about you, Ben? What's up next for you, mate?
What do you think? Have a guess.
Is it another Swordmaster?
No, it's the White Lions.
Ah, the White Lions.
I loved the White Lions. I like anything with a bit of fur on, really, on the model. But I love the idea that when they came of age, you know, they had to cunt and kill a White Lion, and then they wore it like as their pelt, and that they were like the bodyguard as well, and they're real dynamic unit, especially even with the metal models. They had a real movement to them, and then when the plastic ones came out, when they released the White Lion's Chariots, I nearly had a kitten. I was so excited about that. I just absolutely yeah. brilliant. And I did have this project at one point to do as Council's Dragon Prince's unit, using the White Lion infantry and the White Lion chariots to make White Lions mounted on White Lions.
Ah, that would be cool.
It was actually. I did a couple of mock-ups until and then the game died, and I was like, oh, there's no point in continuing that. But you know, it would have cost an awful lot of money to do the unit, but.
How cool a unit would they have been? Yeah. I always just remember the White Lions being really scary because they just wouldn't move anywhere. Like, you come across the White Lions, you'd go into a unit of White Lions and you'd never ever shift them. But like, firstly, you know, as a Wood Elf player, you try to shoot them, but then they've got their White Lion cloaks, of course, which gives them extra resilience to shooting. And you go into combat with them and then they're stubborn. And then 8th edition rocked around, and I think this was started by Nick Gentile, who's an Australian wargamer who was on a podcast I used to listen to a lot, The Dwellers Below. He started to run them in hordes. And can you imagine anyone at all trying to fight their way through a horde of White Lions? It's just absolutely preposterous.
They were a great central unit for the battle. Put them in the middle, probably alongside the way I used to play was to put them and the Swordsmasters on either side of a block of either Lothan Seaguard or Spearmen, and then just sort of dominate the center ground. And depending on how many points I had to play with, depended on how big those units were. And most of my shooting came from repeated bolt throwers, just like twanging overhead. It's good, great unit. Love the size of their axes as well. They're just absurdly big. And the thing is about that is that, you know, they've always got a trump card, the elves, for absurdly big axes, which is mithril. It doesn't weigh anything. It's great. it's great. And they just looked fantastic with their
clothes. A mithril axe probably weighs the same as a metal White Lion.
yeah.
All right, what am I going to choose next? I'm going to choose a unit which is a bit of a homage to your co-host on the 2Ps podcast. This one's for Dan, who used to have in his army, he used to have an army from Lothan, and he used to have a big unit of Sea Guard. And I always thought they were such a cool idea to be a mixed arms unit that would fight not only really proficiently in ranks with spears, but also with bows. And I can remember Dan used to have them as his core unit. And in small games where, you know, you would be forced to make a decision between one or the other, if you were playing like 750 points, they just absolutely dominated the field because they could do everything. They were brilliant. And Dan's especially were cool because he modeled them. He had you get little bits in the sprues, like seagulls and things, and he had them flying overhead that he'd done on bits of rod. And I always remember them just being really, really great and a really cool unit.
They're great, you know, aren't they? They're one that suffered, I think, for a lot of the times that the elves were in play because the metal models were quite expensive. Really, to create a unit that was about the size of a spearman unit. So I think they got overlooked until Island of Blood came, and then everything changed. Because not only were they a great miniature, but they were just absurdly better than the normal spearman miniature. So they ended up just being people's go-to unit because because the miniature was just 10 times better. So it took the lid off of it, didn't it, really?
And definitely, I'm sure they were the inspiration for the Eidneth Deepkin in Age of Sigmar, because they worship the same god. Or they haven't, maybe they didn't worship him, but they have the incarnate of Mathlan, don't they, in Eidneth Deepkin?
Well, I think the Deepkin were actually modeled off of a group of exiles of the elves.
Oh, really? So maybe not them, but they definitely have some connection to Mathlan, who was the god of the god of the high seas. And I've also picked them because the only tease that we've had of high elves so far in the old world is these coastal provinces and things that they have that they maintain. I don't know quite what you'd call them, sort of outposts, I suppose, is what they would be more like these days than cities or anything like that, but they have them on the border of Britonia. And so I think the first unit that we might see, or the most common unit to be seen in the old world, might be a Lothan Sea Guard.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we spoke in the last episode about the unit that I think they were based on, which is the merchant companies. And I think, you know, when you think about the other units, they're very much a citizen levy that was designed, you know, like the spearmen and the archers and all that kind of stuff. Whereas the Lothan Sea Guard are a kind of a professional unit. They are like full-time spearmen, full-time guard. So I think you're right. I think the sort of units you're more likely to see are going to be a Lothan Sea Guard type unit that was based on the ships and manning the little outposts. And so I'm afraid you're going to see more of those Swiss Army knife elves.
Yeah, can't wait. What's your next pick, Ben?
Well, my next pick goes right back to that first box set, the fourth edition box set with Eltharion the Grim. Because he's just such a great character, like defending his homeland against Grom the Paunch and just wrecking face. I mean, he was kind of where you went if you didn't, because it's really obvious to say, oh, Tyrion's the best like warrior in the whole of Old World. Oh, he is, yeah, great, you know, congratulations. And Teclis is the great wizard, you know, he's Eltharion was both. He was a wizard and he was a warrior, and he rode on flipping griffin, and griffins are awesome.
So yeah,
I think I like griffins more than I like dragons in a lot of ways. I don't really sure why. Probably because of his model, if I'm being honest. It was the first metal model I got. Took me the best part of a day to attach its wings. Learned how to pin attaching his wings. And I absolutely adored it. Absolutely adored that model. And he led my army forever. And it was a genuine moment of sadness when we were just looking up, because he gets captured by Malekith and tortured and blinded. And it was like, it's really cool, actually, that they had developed his character and made him into something else, which was the Swordsmaster of Hoeth, you know, the captain of the Swordsmasters. But he was blind, and he was still wrecking face. And
still weapon skill 8 when he was blind.
He was. I mean, it's amazing. And he had a great model, like a really dynamic model as well. A bit bunched up for, like, modern tastes, but all part of me. But he was a great character, and there was a lovely story in there of the Loremaster of Hoeth, like teaching him how to use a sword, and him eventually becoming, like, you know, as good, and then leading the Swordsmasters. And we just found out, because this is such a long time ago, we went back and had a look, and the rules were in the White Dwarf. They weren't in the codexes. We've been through all the army books. We've been through all the army books, couldn't find his bloody rules. Turns out they were in the White Dwarf. And then it came to 7th edition, and they retconned it back. So that little part of the story was taken out, and Eltharion the Grim on his griffin came out. And I guess that was to give you a set of rules, cooler rules, to use with the Island of Blood, maybe. Because the griffin rider on that could easily be Eltharion.
Now, am I right in saying that? I'm just gonna ask the question. Am I right in saying that Eltharion was the one who was poisoned by a witch elf, and it was like near fatal, and he died potentially? I think he may have died, and then willed his soul back into his body to carry on the fight.
I've not heard that story, but it sounds like something he would do.
I want to know.
And just of course, he's back. His spirit is so, like, badass. It's resurrected itself as a suit of walking armor.
But I think that's the thing about Eltharion, isn't it? Is that he never let anything get him down, and he never let anything stop him. You know, even when he was blinded, he became the best swordsmaster that, you know, that there ever was, and became the leader of the swordsmasters. You know, you've got to admire him, how he just keeps going and keeps going. It's just absolutely amazing. And on his griffin, especially a force to be reckoned with, he had his sunblade, sunfang, or the fang of Eltharion, yeah. I think it's called.
Sunfang, and then his spear, and a couple of spells to use, and absurdly mobile because he could fly. So, you know, he could jump around the battlefield just like a comet, ruining everything. and it's always nice. It was always nice in Warhammer to have multiple wizards. So when you had a character who could double up as a wizard. I mean, he wasn't the primary wizard you took in the army, but he was our wizard. And so you just had that little bit of extra. And actually, I always ended up finding that he was the one who did the damage, because they would waste all of their dispel magic cards dealing with my mage. And then Eltharion would be like, "You forgot about me, didn't you?" La-bam! And so he was always the one who ended up doing, like, remember when you had those boxes of cards like Warhammer Magic? Oh, I still got them on my shelf.
What's cool about him in the setting of the game at the minute is that we know that Luan Orcslayer is the current ruler of Bretonnia, and if ever he needed a hand slaying some orcs, there's Eltharion is the guy to call on. He has a natural hatred of orcs and goblins written into his rule set, so he would be he'd be great to see, because, you know, we're expecting to see some orcs and goblins, because they're just everywhere on the map. Everywhere you look, there's like a forest or a mountain or a nook or a cranny. They're like, the, you know, it's almost like Bretonnia is just finding its feet, so to speak, and it has to rid itself of all of these orcs and goblins. And it does actually run all over them into Athol Lorien, which isn't ideal, because they've got nowhere to go, and then the wood elves have to then deal with them, and it's like they're a bit of a nightmare. So yeah, we could do with Eltharion coming over and lending a hand in the old world.
Well, I'm expecting to see Eltharion, because he was in very recently in Warhammer Total War, him and Grom the Paunch. So I'd love to see a new Grom the Paunch model. I've recently painted the old one. So I think we're going to see, as perhaps the first elven character will be Eltharion the Grim, and the first goblin character will be Grom the Paunch. That would be my prediction. It would be so nice to see Eltharion the Grim redone. So nice to see that.
And I think the chances of that happening have definitely gone up since he's been released in Age of Sigmar, because I think this is one of the really cool things, especially about the High Elves, is that a lot of the characters are still around.
In one form or another. I mean,
yeah,
he's kind of like the killbot of the Lumineth Realm Lords. Just point at something and go, "Kill that." "Yes, my lord."
All right, so for my last pick, I have chosen Alethanar, the Prince of Naggarith, and the Shadow King. And the reason that I've picked him is because I just think he's got a really cool story to him. So he's like the last of his name, and all of his family were killed by Dark Elves, because a lot of Dark Elves were living in the province of Naggarith. And he took it upon himself, him and his shadow warriors, to just kill them all. And even the ones that weren't killed in battle, he'd hunt them down and he'd find them. And he used to like crucify them up in the trees, and he took absolutely bloody vengeance on them. And he was really just a bit of a bastard, really, if we're honest, in how he went about it. But there's this tagline when I was doing the reading about different characters and who I might choose, and this just really sold me on him, where it just says, for his part, the Witch King Malekith has passed beyond the veil of mortal concerns. But if Malekith any longer fears anything, he fears the vengeance of Alethanar.
Yeah. He's one of those reminders that even in a race that's noble and pure, that that when they get pissed off, it's kind of, it goes deep and it doesn't get left behind very often.
And he's given the Shadow Warriors now, like the Shadow Warriors, whether he's with them or not, they have a hatred of Dark Elves because of where they're from and because of everything they've been through with Alethanar. And I remember he used to have this incredible bow. I can't remember what it was called now off the top of my head. What was it called? The Moon Bow. And it basically had the rules for a bolt thrower. So it hit at strength 7 and caused D3 wounds. It's just incredible that you just like hit you with the strength of a bolt thrower through his arrow. So
he was the bow was brilliant, wasn't it? The bow was brilliant. I have to be honest with him though. I never really bought into the model. Total War did a really good job of making, you know, bringing him to life, actually. And his artwork is just fantastic in the book. There's that, I think it originally started off as a sketch and then it was redrawn, done as a painting. And he's got that washed out face and he's got the white robe, but he's really dark and there's ravens flying around him and he's just striding forward carrying a dark elf head as if, you know, he's just picked up a bag of apples from Morrison and carried it over to the till. It's a wonderfully sort of brutal picture it's always worth remembering that the Dark Elves and the High Elves they're not too dissimilar. There's just one decision that divides them, you know, that decision to, you know, abandon their nobility, or not really, because in some ways the Dark Elves are still noble and honourable, but, you know, they've just chosen a darker path. And, you know, the Shadow King is the reminder for the surviving High Elves that it's one bad day away from wearing black robes, you know.
Yeah. And the Shadow Warriors are always some of my favourite models as well, especially the new ones with the closed faced helmets were just like absolutely phenomenal. And as you said, much better models than Alethanar himself. But for me, he was kind of the embodiment of what they did. And if he joined a unit of Shadow Warriors, he gave them an additional -1 to hit in the shooting phase. So he still had his tie-ins with them. But yeah, that's my choice.
The fully enclosed helmets are just wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. If Bitsbox sold like 50 of those, I'd do a unit of spearmen with just those helmets. They just look superb.
Yeah.
Maybe that's something for a... No.
So you're going to have your Lion Cavalry and you're going to have your enclosed helmet spearmen. This is an expensive project, Ben.
Well, it's one of the reasons I like the Swordsmaster models. Is do you remember the ones where they had like the fully enclosed face?
Yeah.
They look so good. So good.
All right. Well, those are our top picks. Obviously, there's plenty more that we could talk about and would like to talk about, and we could go on and on all day. But let us know in the comments, you know, which units you would have chosen. Maybe you'd have chosen the same as us. Probably you would have chosen different to us. But let us know your reasons why. It's just great to get a conversation started and to talk about our love for this race and this game. But A very big thanks, Ben, for coming on the channel talking high elves with me today. It's been really great fun. I've really enjoyed your company. It's nice because we haven't really seen each other for a little while now, but hopefully we'll be able to catch up again in not too long. And also, very importantly, if you have not listened to Ben's podcast, the Two Piece Podcast, do go and check it out, because it is by far and away my favorite podcast in the world.
Thank you, man.
I'm not just saying that because Ben is my friend, because he's on here. Genuinely, Ben and Dan have a really good rapport, and they've got a lot of knowledge, and they have a lot of fun and a lot of laughs, and they cover all different kinds of aspects of the hobby, and they're both very knowledgeable about, you know, painting and modeling and lore, and all, they cover everything that's coming out. So be sure to check out the Two P's, and there'll be a link down under there.
Rubbish of the rules.
And remembering names of units.
It's awful. I've got like Warhammer dementia. Never mind. Anyway, it's been a pleasure being on with you, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Really, and thanks everyone who watched. Take care, and we'll catch you next time. Oh,